back. Your boy is back. The one and only, the kid. I say El Nino when I say it in Spanish. The nonprofit sector connector. Not exactly coming to you from the top of my house, just below the roof in the attic. It's a bit of a road show, although this is my office. But we're gonna, I gotta rewrite the song. We gotta rewrite the lyrics. Uncle Brendan Levy at the Queens Chamber of Commerce. We gotta rewrite the theme song because Tommy D is gonna not do the show from the attic so much anymore. But we are in the office. Shout out to my team over here at Vanguard Benefits. We are an employee benefits agency, do a lot of work in the nonprofit sector, supporting nonprofit organizations, both on the side of helping them attract and retain talent through benefit strategies, but also all the work we do philanthropically. My guest and I were just chatting, and we both have a bit of the raspy voice on a Friday morning because it is, I guess it's the time of year when we are out there doing anything and everything we can to support organizations, to tell the good work, to tell the good stories. And that's like, fortunately, what as the nonprofit sector connector, I get to do all the time, man. I get to, last night I was at North Shore TV, where I'll be this afternoon doing a couple of shows, but it was community media day. So we had a bunch of people there. We were doing a little bit of networking, talking about the importance of public access television. And North Shore TV has been a great partner for Tommy D and hashtag ending the stigma together and Long Island Changemakers and obviously all the other cool stuff that they helped me out with. So let's get into today's show. One thing I got to shoot out there for everybody to know is we are like 48 hours away from the deadline. As this is live, you know, on Friday morning, next Monday, the deadline for the applications for the Long Island Imagine Awards. So, you know, go to imagineawardsli.com if you have any programs or services as a nonprofit that serve people in Nassau and Suffolk County, or you are located in Nassau or Suffolk County. If you work out here on the island, make sure you get those applications in. The deadline for those applications is midnight on next Monday. And then we, as the committee, get to read all those applications, which is definitely a very cool part of the process. But an even cooler part of the process is once we get to the semifinal round, we get to interview the semifinalists. We get to do these one-on-one interviews, which is how I got to learn about this important organization and my guest, Kavita Mara. I'm doing my best. I've been practicing, Kavita, so many times since we've worked out.
You're doing great.
I appreciate it. Saki for South Asian Survivors. The name of today's show actually is Inheriting the Power of All Survivors. You know, your boy's always about having fun, but you know what? There are serious challenges going on this planet, and there are serious things we need to talk about. So today we're going to have those discussions. Just to finish that one piece, I met my guest through the process of the New York City Imagine Awards because the organization and Kavita were finalists in the, it were semifinalists, and Kavita was a finalist in the leadership excellence category. So we got a couple minutes to hang out together at the event. So first of all, before you get into anything, what'd you think of being involved with the New York City Imagine Awards? What'd you think of that?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it was such an amazing opportunity to bring together so many leaders across the sector. And firstly, thank you for having me, Tommy D. Really appreciate being on your show and uplifting the work that we do at Saki. But the New York City Imagine Awards clearly is doing something so different for the sector, and it's refreshing at a time in which we're seeing the sector just experience such increased stress. To celebrate the work, the joy, and the progress that the sector makes for the community in New York City is pretty outstanding.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. It's a compliment that really I appreciate as a committee member. It wasn't my brainchild. It was certainly the brainchild of Ken Serini, my buddy, my friend, my collaborator in so many different ways. I mean, we founded the Nonprofit Resource Hub together with some other partners. But the event coming up, gang, is going to be April 28th, 2026. That's the Long Island Imagine Awards. Kavita, right here on the show, I'd love for you to be my guest that evening from 5:30 to 9:30. You have it. We got a table of 10. You're the first person I'm inviting. I would love to have you there. And if there's somebody on your team you want to bring or somebody else in your life you want to bring, welcome to do it. So we'll take that offline. But that event, gang, listen, 3 days, 13 hours, 54 minutes. Now it's 53 minutes and 59 seconds. It's literally a clock ticking down. So hurry up, get your applications in. Now we get into the show. As I say, there are very important challenges, things going on in this world right now. We talked very slightly just before we got started, but I really want to hear about your journey into the nonprofit sector, your journey into this work that you're doing. I look back on LinkedIn and I see you studied gender studies undergrad at NYU, gender studies and history, South Asian studies at Columbia University, right? On and on in the work, right? We talk about that a lot, being in the work. This is one of those things I feel like maybe you didn't know you were going to become a nonprofit leader, but you were going to be in this work, and maybe that's how it all translated out. But guess what? I don't need to guess because you're going to tell me the story and we're going to learn about how that all happened. So please take it away. Let's talk about this. Obviously, we're going to get into Saki and what Saki does for survivors, but I want to hear the story, please.
What led me into this work?
Yes, please.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I grew up working class, Jersey. And when I was in university, I knew that I wanted to do something sort of out of the box at that time with my life. I knew I wanted to live a life of service. And I was toying with the idea of either pursuing a PhD or working in the nonprofit sector. I knew pretty actually early on. And in 2002, I was an intern at Saki. It was my third year at NYU. And I spent the fall semester here. And I remember seeing our former executive director, Purvi Shah, speak at our gala. We used to do our gala in the fall at that time versus the spring. And I turned to my then boyfriend, now husband, and I said to him, "I want to be the next Purvi Shah." And he said to me, "No, you're going to be the next Kapit Amara." And I have wanted this job since I was 21 years old.
Come on. Wow.
And I had applied for it twice. The first time I didn't even get an interview. The second time I did, and they were, I don't know how, but they hired me in 2017. After my internship at Saki, I went to work at an organization that's called now Womankind, but I was previously called New York Asian Women's Center. I was an intern at their development team, but then right after college, for about 2.5 years, I worked on the program side, and I had a caseload, and I worked overnight in its residential facility from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And I did that shift 3 to 4 nights a week, so it was a full-time job. And then during the day, I would go to graduate school at Columbia. Because again, I grew up working class. And so I didn't have mommy and daddy paying for my graduate school education. And I was still thinking, do I want to get a PhD? Do I not? And then I remember the distinct moment where I was like, there is no way I'm going to pursue a PhD. And that was at Columbia. And that's when I knew it crystallized for me that I wanted to be only in the nonprofit sector. I've spent the last nearly 25 years of my life in the sector, which is I had a really bad intake the night before. And this woman had come in from a really horrific, and I'll spare you all the details, case. And she came in with her children, and it was a very public case. It was actually in the media. And I did her intake, and it was so clear the brutality that she had experienced, the violence that she and the trauma that her and her family had endured. It got them settled in, went the night, left the shelter at 7 a.m., got to class around 10 or 11, I can't remember, but it was early in the morning. And I just remember how disconnected that classroom experience was from the reality I had seen the night before. And I could not imagine my life being in that ivory tower. Now, no shade to anyone who is in academia, because it informs a lot of my political consciousness now and how I think about the work. But who I am and how I grew up, and the fact that I just know I like to get my hands really dirty and I like to be in it, and service is super important to me. That was the moment I was like, no, this is going to be my career. This is going to be my life's work. And so it literally has been.
Fork in the road, right? Two paths, and that was it. There was no
That
going
was
back.
it. Yep, that was it.
Wow. So take us through. So you're doing all this work while you're in school, right? You're impacted and connected to the service work. Obviously, that was a theme that you always had about service. I jotted that down too. Live a life of service, you said, and that's critically important. And that's the people. Folks, listen, not everybody's going to be that way, and I'm not here to change the entire world. I'm here to spend time with the people who want to be the world changers, and who, like some folks are just going to be about capitalism and about the money and not care about people, and I'm not trying to throw shade either. However, There are folks that are all about service, and those are the people that I like to highlight. I want to talk about, so you had the internship at Saki. There's other steps in your journey at other organizations. So let's kind of go down that path that you took as you moved through your career before you got this role that you wanted 20 some odd years prior to taking it
I
on.
mean, so I after my time at New York Asian Women's Center, I again, like I my working class experience really shapes who I am. And it's just to put this in context, Indian Americans, not the overall demographic of South Asians, but Indian Americans are actually the wealthiest immigrant demographic in the United States. So there is a loneliness that I have navigated through as a result of just being working class. My family came to the United States in 1977. My parents still live in the house that I grew up in in Central Jersey. I wanted to be and learn from an organization where class political consciousness was like at the ethos of its work. So from my time at what's now called Womankind, I moved to Taxi Workers Alliance, where I was there for nearly 3 years, and I was the benefits coordinator and was engaged in a lot of political organizing. I was part of the 2008 strikes, and people might know the work of TWA now because of Mayor-elect Mamdani, who was standing in solidarity during the hunger strikes with TWA. And I think the leader of Taxi Workers Alliance, Bairavi Desai, is a brilliant visionary who believes in bringing together people to enact change. And I learned a lot there. It was a tremendous experience. But I did not have the language back then to name what I can name now, which is I had been doing direct service work up until that point for about 7 years. And I was also healing from a tremendous, and I was in the thick of a lot of family trauma. I'm a survivor of violence. And it was extremely complicated for me. And I realized that I wanted to be in the nonprofit sector, but being in direct service work was not the right place for me. And it still isn't. So I transitioned to fundraising and development. And it was a hard transition because I had, there's no playbook for it. And unless I went to a school like Wagner, which, I sometimes kick myself for not doing that. I did not have the professional chops to say, okay, I can easily transition into fundraising.
Let's
But
stay there a
I
second. I want to interrupt you just to stay there a second. So let's
yeah.
reference that reference of Wagner. Why would Wagner be somewhere that would be important to kind of inform the work on the development side or the fundraising side?
Well, I think it supports the professionalization of the sector, right? And we don't often talk enough about that, right? We talk about how social workers go to school for their professionalizations. Lawyers do, doctors do, right? But we don't credit the work that nonprofit professionals have and the background and the skill set, and also the refinement that can happen through a leading institution like that.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Absolutely. So from there, I transitioned to development, and that was it was tricky, and I learned a lot. I know that we probably need to break soon. We're
We're
good?
good. We're good. We're good. Keep going. We'll do that
Okay.
when we're ready. Keep going.
Oh, good. Okay, great. I went to Easter Seals New York, which is a statewide organization and actually has a presence in Long Island. And I was on the marketing and communication side. I had never worked on a development team. I'd never worked for something so large in terms of a statewide entity. But I got to understand how a strong development shop works. Everything from special events, major gifts, GR, and marketing comms. That was helpful framework for me to then try to lead a development department at an organization called SAYA. They work with South Asian youth in New York. Serving the Asian American community has been a huge piece of my work, and it's been always super important to me. And so there's something that's always just a gravitational pull that's just brought me back, whether it's immigrants, Asian Americans, or something feminist leaning. At Saya, I was there for a brief period of time. I did not do well. I'm going to say this publicly. I haven't really shared it publicly. I was fired. I was fired for not being able to fundraise. And I did not succeed at that job. I talk about it now all the time because it's kind of funny. And it was deeply painful. And we don't talk about our failures enough.
It is it so I've been in the sales profession my entire career, right? And it's very like cut and dry. Like you bring in the number, you don't bring in the number. It's a profession that's just real, right? Like either you're doing it or you're not. And I've definitely been sacked from several companies over the years in my career. And it is a bitter pill to swallow. But we grow from that. So I love that I'll use the word, we're both being a little vulnerable, that is a real thing. People get fired and it burns, even if it wasn't the right place to be. Like, even if it's like now and you look back and you go, oh, I get it. I learned from that. But in it, oh man, it's brutal. It's brutal.
I was angry. And the one thing my husband will tell you though is that what I'm I think this probably stems from my early part of life, but like when I get really angry, I realize that we probably can't curse. I'm gonna prove you wrong. And
Watch
then
me.
you watch me. Exactly.
I get it.
Like, just you think I can't do it? Watch me. And
I
I
got a
had
story
another.
about that. When we come back, I might tell you a story about that. I am going to tell the story. I'm not going to say who it is, but I'll tell the story. We are going to take a quick break, but I want to dive back into this whole development thing because as the top officer, as the executive director, the CEO, man, we are, not me personally, I'm a board member in a lot of organizations, but that top officer is like, I don't want to necessarily say chief development officer, but like that's actually front of the story, right? Out there, big part of the development team. So the fact that you were programmatic and development, had some wins, had some losses, right? Is all the stuff that informs us as we go through these careers. I mean, like you talked about, it's fundraising season. We're out there getting the money. We're out there getting the money. We're out there getting the money so we can fund our programs. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We'll dive back into development. I will tell a personal story that is not my story to tell, but I will never tell you who I'm talking about because, it's not my story to tell. We will be right back. The show is Philanthropy and Focus, the nonprofit sector connector. That's your boy, Tommy D. We'll be right back.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
All right, man. I grew up a hip hop head, man, but I listen to all types of music. But I feel like we just need to scratch the record there where it says attic because I'm not in the attic anymore. But I'm not sure what we got to do. But that is why the show is called Philanthropy in Focus. And focus is spelled with a PH because we used to say fat back in the day. And I've been listening to a lot of Tribe Called Quest lately. And that's really that's what I grew up on, that music, man, and De La Soul. And I used to love Cypress Hill a lot too. But Tribe, just that conscious hip hop music. Shout out to Fee Fam and Building Beats because they were one of the winners at the Imagine Awards. I got the opportunity to interview Fee Fam on this show. And the whole beginning of the show was me just joking with him about his name being Fee Fam, PHI. second name PHAM. And I was like, oh my God, dude, this show's philanthropy in focus. There used to be a guy on the Mets called Tommy Pham. I was like collecting all his business cards. My son and I had a joke about it, just because I thought it was so funny and so cool. So this is this type of stuff that goes on in my head. So shout out to all my neurodivergent people, because your boy definitely has got a little bit of the extra on the ADHD side. Thanks, Jesse, for pointing that out, by the way, in the chat. All right, let's get into what I was going to tell. I was going to tell this really quick story about somebody who I'll never tell you who it is. But this particular person got into a program, or was trying to get into a doctorate program, and was told by, let's say, the head of the department that, listen, you do not belong here. You cannot hack it here. You will not make it here. This person doubled and tripled down. And when they were asked to do an internship, they didn't do an internship. They did two with an externship on top of it. They traveled around the country doing work in, I'm going to be careful about the word. I'll just say in psychology. So this person just doubled and tripled down and is a doctor now. And that is because somebody said, like to you, no, you can't do it. And the answer was, sure, watch me. And I guarantee the words were not just sure, watch me. Similar to the words, Kavita, that you almost used before we went to a break. I say pissed on this show, and that's like as far as I go on cursing. But when you know me in real life, I tend to use some colorful language, right? But like on this show, I try to keep it clean. So I appreciate you doing the same. The organization is Saki. The work is all up. It's a nonprofit organization to eradicate gender-based violence in the South Asian and Indo-Caribbean diaspora, led by and centering on survivors. They provide trauma-informed direct services, actively push for change, and stand as a go-to resource for both allies and advocates. We're going to get into the work more of the organization shortly, but back to your story. Development, man. Development is critically important because we can't run organizations without funds, right? It just doesn't work. So as a leader, and you have programmatic and you have development experience, doesn't that help you? I've walked in your shoes. I can, not that I have all the answers, but I've done what you're doing, like when you speak to your team. Can you just speak to that generally and then maybe even at Saki?
Yeah, I think the experience of having failed in development, and then I worked for an organization called Glamour Gals, which is actually founded in Long Island, back in 2010 to 2013. And it had an entrepreneurial sort of energy to it. The CEO at that time, and I don't know if she still does, but she lived in Paris. So I had a lot of creative license to help build out both the fundraising as well as the programmatic components of it. And I loved it. I loved the work. And I loved being able to build something. And then I found my niche. I found like, oh, this is what I like to do. And so I helped sort of scale our work at Glamour Gals. And then I moved to the Boys and Girls Club of Newark, where I learned a lot about community. I learned a lot about scale. Scale was also an area where I focused on, and that's been sort of part of my trajectory also at Saki. But I tap into, in my current work, to answer your question more directly, I tap into my programmatic experience, my development experience, of course, and that informs a lot of my consciousness, but it's my lived experience, really, what I lean into more than anything else. As somebody who is a survivor of violence, who grew up with domestic violence, who didn't have a lot of financial means, I can understand the intersection of what it means to have multiple lived experiences at once, whether that's like navigating through economic barriers, whether it's navigating through being a brown person in America, whether it's navigating through being a woman and a brown person in America, and being a survivor. That informs a lot of how I think about the work. And my fundraising background only strengthened when I tapped into. So, a lot of folks might not know this about me, but my mom owned a Hallmark store for 27 years. She got it in 1983, so the year after I was born, and she had it until 2010. November 18, 2010 is when she lost the store, for financial reasons. And I started working at that store when I was 14 years old. I worked my first 100-hour week by the time I was 14. On my feet, it was Christmas season. I'll never forget it. I'd never done physical labor like that for my entire life. But that taught me everything about running a business. Retail taught me how to deal with difficult people, how to deal with angry people, how to sell, how to talk. If I could sell wrapping paper to a 25-year-old guy and tell him to buy a bow on top of it,
Always be
that's
closing. Always be closing, man.
ABC, ABC.
I love that.
It is that same skill set that's able to translate to say, I love this work. You should love it too. We're going to change the world together, right?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for saying that. Hold that thought because I don't want you to lose where you're going. But I just thank you for saying that because listen, I'm a sales guy. At the end of the day, yes, I'm a business owner. We have a great agency. We do great work for our clients. At the end of the day, we tell stories. We solve problems for people. That's sales, right? And that's what development is. And any shout out to all my development people. I was at the AFPLI event last week, or 2 weeks ago, maybe. Yeah, 2 weeks ago, because we did not do a show that Friday morning. And my friend Prashant Gupta was the MC. Last year, I was the MC at the AFPLI event. Prashant, shout out to Prashant Gupta, my buddy, works over at Mental Health Association, Asgard County, by the way. I got the hoodie, right? Gone but not forgotten. I emceed the walk at Jones Beach. Too many folks losing their lives from overdose, and it's tragic. We can't talk about all that right now, but it is a trauma situation, and it is traumatic. Excuse me, it is tragic. But shout out to Prashant, and shout out to AFPLI. Shout out to all my development people. I love my development people, man. Sure, I'm friends with CEOs and EDs, but development, man, that's a front lines, man. That's where it all happens, is those conversations. And it is a sales job. It is a storytelling job because once you can connect the heart to the and the mission to for these individual donors or these corporate donors or these other, just anybody who wants to support, whether it be time, treasure, or talent, it's all about those stories. That's what development is. So maybe I took you totally off track. I'm not sure, but let's keep it going where you wanted to go because I got to go with what happens in my brain sometimes.
No,
Kavita,
I
take it away.
love that. I think it's so refreshing to have just a conversation too. It makes it so much easier. But yeah, no, I lean into my retail skills, and my time in retail and watching my mom operate. My mom is 83 now, knock on wood. She stopped working this year at 82. And that's not necessarily by choice either way, but I saw that woman operate in the worst of circumstances and she just held her head high. I remember how her team used to have a tremendous amount of respect for her. And she used to just keep going, even when she didn't want to, she just kept going. So I think that informs how I think about or what I lean into in my hardest of moments, because nothing was worse than that for me. Like I'm, you hear that in my voice today. I've worked at another like 80-hour week. I've got a full day today, and I've got events tomorrow night. But nothing was worse than retail in the 90s on your feet when the malls open at 9 a.m. and they close at 11 p.m. right before Christmas, and there's no break. You're lucky to go to the bathroom two or three times a day, because it's so busy. This is before Amazon, right? This is, and
I thought,
everybody
listen,
just went to the mall.
grinding it out. It's funny, man. The thing, not funny like to laugh at. It's just like when you think about the, like, I was in a mall the other day and stores are shuttered. I mean, listen, I'm a few years ahead of you in age and stuff like that. So, but I not that far ahead. We grew up going to these places. That's how. Listen, I'm not going to do a whole thing about Amazon, but they do come to my house often. There was a thing on. I was driving in. I was either listening to 1010 Winds or Bloomberg this morning. I think it was 1010 Winds, and they were talking about porch pirates. And they actually said porch pirates gang. For those of you who don't know, if you don't know, we're talking about folks who go to your house and steal your Amazon or other delivered packages. people were like being interviewed. You know, they always get like the man or woman on the street, and people are like, yeah, I can't even leave my house anymore. Like, they can't even go to work because they're worried somebody's going to clip the stuff off the front. I'm like, dude, go to work. All right. What are we talking about here? But we used to go to malls, gang. We used to go there. Remember the movie Mall Rats and the whole thing? That was a place we would go to hang out. Like, my kids now, I drop them off at the mall, whatever, and they walk around. And, but like, stores are shuttered, stores are closed. Yes. They just don't even exist anymore. So, and I know, trust me, I know the Hallmark store. Great spot to go to when you need gifts like last minute, because you got all like different stuff and you got knickknacks and all the kind of cool stuff. I will tell you this. Since this isn't going to affect your mom because she doesn't have the business anymore, I buy all my greeting cards at the dollar store because I'm cheap. And to spend $7 on a card is crazy when I can spend $1.25. So anyway, shout out to Dollar Tree. If you want to sponsor the show, Tommy D at philanthropyandfocus.com. But so I get retail. I grew up in a restaurant business. I know restaurant hospitality. I know putting in a lot of hours on your feet. I know it, the grind, the hustle. We used to say, hey, man, we're in the weeds. We're in the weeds. And I get that from the retail thing. But like, what a great blessing for you to have that. If for some reason, I just got to say this name because it was coming up for me while you were talking. And it could be just how ubiquitous he is. And the immigrant mentality and the grind and the swag, but also with the love and compassion. Shout out to Gary V, Gary Vaynerchuk. And, you know, one of the stories, like listening to Gary V many years ago and Ken Serini with the Imagine Awards is really where philanthropy and focus came from. You know, it came from me listening to Gary V and Gary V saying, hey, listen, if there's something you're passionate about, you feel strongly about, you want to build content around that, that's what you do. And Ken Serini with the Imagine Awards. And that's why I'm approaching 240 episodes of an idea of something that was just like, I don't want to have a show where I have plenty of friends who are consultants in the sector, but I was like, I don't want to have a show highlighting those people. I want to have a show highlighting organizations and the incredible work they're doing. And now we're approaching 240 episodes on a plan. Talk about sales, right? Sales quota on a plan of 5,000. I will do 5,000 episodes of this show before I disappear. So that's incredible to even think about. But that means in a lot of days, I'm going to do 3 or 4 episodes when we get to that point. But the point of all that is, who knows what the point of all that is? No, the point of all that is it's drive, it's ambition. And you take that mentality of 100-hour weeks, and then you drive that into this work. Kavita, that is what it's about. And these are the folks that I like to hang out with, are people who are doing that work. Tick tock, tick tock. Tommy needs to take a break. All right, we'll take a break. We will be right back. Philanthropy and focus.
Misalignment within your sales team or with the client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and the space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
All right, I don't know if it's the caffeine is finally hitting me after this fourth cup of coffee or if I'm just fired up because this work is so important, but I got to just put this out there. I do not have a Saki hoodie Are there Saki hoodies? Do they exist, or what's the story there?
I need a Saki hoodie. We're trying to make them. I have a U2 hoodie on right now because I'm a huge. I love
Did you
music.
see? You love U2? You
I
did you see them
love
at the Sphere?
U2.
You saw them at the
Yes,
Sphere?
I
Dude,
saw them at the Sphere.
what? Come on, tell me about that. Crazy, right?
Was insane. I've been to. I think. Listen, my sisters have been to much more. Between the both of them, I think they've been to about 30 or 40 concerts. I've only been to maybe 8 or 10. But I love U2, and it
You've
was the
seen
first
them eight or
time.
ten times? Is that, are you saying you've seen U2 almost 10 times? And they've seen them
So,
30?
because they've been following him since the early 80s. But I cannot believe I heard All I Want Is You live. Like, I've never heard it live, and that gave me chills.
I believe that. Yeah.
And so that was incredible for me. It was probably one of the best U2 concerts, but I will say the difference at the Sphere was most of the people were seated. And I remember 10 years ago when I used to go to a concert, everybody was on their feet the whole time.
Course. Yeah.
And
Yeah,
so,
but
we're
is that
getting
just
a
the
little old.
venue? Yeah, do you think that's the venue? Everybody see the cause of the venue, or because they're not really fans, maybe it's like more of that.
I have no idea. That's a
Yeah.
good question, but I'm waiting for them to go back on tour, hopefully sometime, but huge U2 fan. But we do need a Saki hoodie.
We need
It's
Saki
in the
hoodies. We'll
works.
talk about that. We need swag. I'm all about the swag. I mean, like you, I probably have 50 or 60 hoodies right now from organizations because I like to rep everybody. So I love that. So we all work that out. Again, when I do the show Long Island Changemakers in the studio, it's not a requirement that people bring me gifts, but it has become a thing where people show up with like stuff for me to wear, and I'm all about it. So anyway, gang, if you let me give you my home address. No, I'm not giving you all my home address so you can send me hoodies. Don't be silly. But I would
We're going to send you Amazon packages.
yeah, exactly. Watch out for the porch pirates, everybody. Hashtag no porch pirates. All right. I want to get into there was another organization before we get to Saki. Tell me about SOAR if we could, and then we get into Saki.
So back in 2020, 2020, right around the pandemic, we started to form a national organization called South Asian SOAR. Which serves as the umbrella to all of the South Asian survival organizations. And I think the national work is really critical work. There are versions of Saki that are sprinkled across the country. And as I'm thinking about, what are the next steps for Saki too, I'm also thinking about what is our national footprint potentially, or like how can we think about leveraging our influence across the country in some capacity, and that's like very much on my mind. So just to give you a sense of like what's been happening at Saki, because I
Yeah.
it's kind of timely. We when I started 8.5 years ago, our operating budget was 800,000. We had about 12 team members total, one small office in Lower Manhattan, and now we're at about 50 people. Between full-time and part-time, mostly full-time, with a $7 million operating budget. And then we also have a reserve, which is helpful just to have that runway. We applied for the open call process managed through Lever for Change with Mackenzie Scott.
Yeah.
The application was submitted in 2023. And we were awarded $2 million in 2024 through that
I just saw that
open call
post.
process.
Yeah, I saw that
But
post on LinkedIn last week, right?
no. So that's the second part for what I'm going to share with you. So the second thing is, earlier this year, Lever for Change did a second open call process, which was through for Pivotal Ventures, which is obviously funded for Melinda French Gates. And there were 4,000 applications globally across 119 countries. 80 plus organizations received anywhere from 1 to 5 million. Saki was one of those 80 organizations. So we are one of two organizations globally, knock on wood, that received the open call through Action for Women's Health funded by Pivotal Ventures, and the open call process for Mackenzie Scott, which was in 2024. The open call for Action for Women's Health is focused on scalability, so that's been really on my mind.
First of all, congrats on those dollars. These are, if you don't mind, just get technicals. Are they unrestricted? Are they restricted? What's the story on how do you have to allocate certain ways about spending the dollars?
The Mackenzie Scott money is a recognition of prior work, right? So it's a recognition of the work that Sucky has done and the legacy of its work, which there have been moments where this organization was on the brink of folding. But not for the good graces, the leadership, and the vision of some really remarkable people in the community.
Yeah.
That Sucky is still standing today. And right before it was announced, the Action for Women's Health grant last week, before it was announced, I actually took a few people. I had a few calls and I took some folks out for dinner. I told them what was about to be announced. And I said, look at what you built. Like, look at what you made happen. Because Sucky was so close to folding at certain points in its history.
So when you say that, look at what you did, meaning this thing wasn't gonna be here if you folks didn't get involved. And when you say that, let's just call it what it is, support. They were bringing in dollars to help an organization, or bringing in time or energy. Tell us about
exactly.
That.
It was their time, talent, and treasure.
Yeah.
There's one person in particular I'm thinking about, just three boys. She served as our acting ED when the organization was on the brink of folding. We had no money in the bank. This was back in the financial crisis of 2009. And literally just kept the organization running through her service. And then brought on my predecessor, Taloma, back in 2010, 2011, who then started rebuilding the organization, and then Shalini was our next ED after Taloma and then me. But had it not been for these incredible leaders who were like, actually, I'm going to sacrifice something of myself to ensure that the continuity of this organization, we would not be standing where we are today.
Yeah, I got to just jump in with this one. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed. It is the only thing that ever has, gang. It is the only thing. That's Margaret Mead. It's the only thing that ever has. Don't doubt that your vote is important. Don't doubt that your voice is important. You know, I'm interviewing somebody on my show, Long Island Changemakers, a gentleman named Kevin Christman, who is a self-advocate in the disability space. And he's going to be, we're just meeting because he spoke at a legislative breakfast a couple weeks ago, and I met him through Cerebral Palsy in Nassau County out here on Long Island, which is a client of ours here at the agency and also a very close friend of ours. And I actually, when he spoke at this legislative breakfast, I actually canceled the show on a Friday morning. I said, I will not do a show on October 7th because I will be witnessing Kevin speaking. And I said, I got to have Kevin in there. The advocacy work, gang, it's all about, you have all the power and all the control. Man, just use our voices, use your energy. Gavin, so what do you have to say about that? I mean, I think it feeds right into the work you're doing, but I just felt like, you know, a small group, you talk about these people. What if they went left instead of went right, not politically, gang, in a decision? What if they just decided, I can't do that. I can't prop up this organization. I can't invest the time. Maybe the organization doesn't exist, and how many hundreds of thousands of people aren't served? Like, it's that real, right?
Yeah, I mean, because we have such strong ties to the community, I think about that constantly. Like, what if they said, you know what, I'm going to focus on my family and not this organization and work for nothing. I would not have this job, but there are survivors across our community who would not have the critical resources in order to leave a violent situation.
It's that real. Like, it's that basic. Like, I go this way instead of that way, or I can't, you know, because I have to do this. Those choices that individual people make affect, the ripple effect is infinite. I really truly believe the decisions we make is potentially infinite in its ripple, because, you know, the people that will be served by this organization 15 years from now are all impacted because of the decisions your predecessors had made. Game-changing stuff. Shout out to all those people. We're not going to name them now, but thank you for, I don't even know you folks. I hope to meet you at a gala one day, because as a society, we need to be grateful for the type of work that's being done. Final break. We will fly out to a break. We'll fly right back. I want to know programmatically what's going on, how we can help, how somebody plugs into the organization if they need support. That's what we're going to do when we come back. How's that sound? Good, right?
Sounds back. Good. Sorry. Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh, you're good.
Thanks.
We're good. We will be right back.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
I would tell you, if somebody needs support right now, if they found this show somewhere and they need support to get out of a situation right now, what's the best course of action?
Call our helpline. And if you are not able to call our helpline, you can text us or you can email us. And within the next, before the end of the calendar year, we're actually going to have an AI chat box as well.
So just call it out because some folks aren't watching the video. I'm sharing the website, SAKHI.org.
Right, sucky.org, and then it has all of our resources available. You can call our helpline, which is 212-868-6741. Again, it's 212-868-6741. Or you can text us at 305-204-1808. And you'll get a response fairly quickly from a member of our team. And then they will do an immediate safety planning assessment, next steps, all of that to ensure that.
Yeah, and again, if you're in an emergency situation, gang, 911 is always the way to go, right? So you just, if you're in, you need support in the moment, obviously. I want to get into this. Is often when somebody gets to a point where they're able to reach out for help. They're in the most challenging situation they're ever going to be in, right? It's a scary situation. There's anxiety and fear and all that wrapped into one. They connect with your organization. What does that look like? What programs are offered? How does Saki help them in a situation of a moment's notice or going forward?
Yeah. So, I mean, through the course of the last, I would say like 9 or so years, our work has shifted from relying on external partners to bring all of it in-house. So we work with survivors starting at the age of 6 until the sunset of their life. And we have an emerging area of young folks reaching out to us as clients outside of their caregivers because they're often experiencing violence from their caregivers. But when a survivor reaches out to us, we will do an immediate assessment on their safety. And then they are paired with an advocate who will then do a long personalized intake process, everything from safety planning to goal setting to crisis management, to then assessing like what that person needs. And it's a really personalized, bespoke experience. That intake can take anywhere from 30 minutes to 3 hours, depending upon what the person is experiencing and their level of activation. And then that advocate will work with that community member to say, okay, do you need legal support? If you do, we have now immigration services in-house. Or if you need family law support, like we will work with one of our partners. Do you need mental health counseling? We have counselors on staff who work with survivors and meet with them weekly. Do you need housing? We have a housing program that underwrites housing for up to 2 years for a survivor. Do you need access to food? Okay, great. We have three different food locations where you can get food in-house. That's like it's culturally specific. And if you can't pick up the food, then we will have food delivered to you. Do you need access to public benefits or job coaching or access to scholarships or any form of professional development or job coach? Great. Our economic empowerment team will work with you. So we essentially imagine any barrier in a survivor's life. And we say, what is our opportunity to eradicate those barriers so that person can make choices? Because at the end of the day, a survivor, they just need a clear pathway to figure out what their choices are and options. They are the agent of change in their life. Our responsibility is to help clear the path, right? And so that's how we approach the work. It's like, what do you need? We're gonna provide you with whatever you need. And then you determine what your next steps are. We will never tell a survivor you have to leave a situation. We never tell a survivor what their choices are or what they should do, I should say. And a survivor makes the determination. Because fundamentally, if you are a survivor of violence, you're the strongest person I know. Anybody who has experienced violence, anyone who's experienced severe trauma, you have a resilience in you that no one could ever fully appreciate.
So they become that agent of change. Your organization gives them the support and rounds off where they need access to, whether, like you say, housing, food, professional development, scholarships for school, right? Because that's what many folks need, is they need a leg up. If I'm leaving a situation, I need these things that I'm leaving, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think obvious, the word used, bespoke, I think is right on, but customized, it's all a personal situation. Everybody's situation is that person's situation. We don't lock people together, right? This is that everybody's situation is their own. So many people I understand stay in situations because they don't have the support that you're talking about, right? Because if someone leaves, I need quote unquote these things, right? So that's, definitely, I think, a big part. Can you speak to that a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, if you think about it, right? Like, if you're a survivor of violence and you're looking to leave, particularly intimate partner violence, right? You have to hire a private attorney. That costs money. You have to sign a lease. That costs money. You have to find a job. That costs resources. And you have to think about, like, okay, what's my mental health? Therapy in itself is expensive, right? All of those things to heal from the trauma and to move away from trauma are incredibly costly. What we say to survivors is, like, we know that these should not be economic barriers for someone, right? Like, living with safety should be a fundamental human right.
Yeah.
Like, that's just basic.
Yeah.
And so that's why everything we do at Tsuki is, like, in-house, and we do it at Tsuki because we realize, like, otherwise people would be living in violence. And at the end of the day, we are doing life and death work.
Literally.
We are literally doing life and death work. So 100%. Someone should not have to think about their life and staying alive and economics being the barrier to a healthy life.
I totally agree. You know, it's in a time when the work is more necessary than ever, just because of the climate in the world and things like that, it's organizations like yours that I just am so grateful that they exist and the work is important. And to hear that you went from an $800,000 organization with 12 team members to a $7 million organization with 50 team members and bringing all the resources and programs in-house, that is a dynamic shift. It's a sea change. And it just goes to show why organizations like yours, from leadership down, are critically important to society. I'm grateful that your organization exists. What's upcoming? There was a gala that happened. I'm sure there'll be more galas and events. How can we support? What do you need? Who do you want to meet? Tell me about that.
I mean, we are, we have our gala happening on May 1st, 2026 at the Glass House. If folks want to come by, it's a great event. And it really, one of the things about our gala is that We center the work, we center the movement, we center survivor voices. And that is super important to me as we are curating that event. But overall, I mean, listen, I think the work that's happening in the gender-based violence movement right now, more broadly, is shrinking. So if it's not sucky, support your local gender-based violence organization. Support the work that's happening in the anti-violence movement because resources are drying up. Federal resources are drying up. State and city resources are drying up. So yes, we are grateful for anyone who wants to support the work we do. But if not, this is the most important issue of our time. There is not one person in your local community across the state or in this country who is not impacted by gender-based violence.
In all the fun and games that Tommy D likes to have in the world, a big part of this show is telling the important messages and telling the important stories. Gavita, thank you so much for being here with me. Thank you for telling the stories. Thank you for the work you do. And it's not just you. I know that. Thank you for the 49 team members aside from yourself that are doing the work on the front lines with these survivors, whether it be mental health services or food services or access to other different resources. I send gratitude to all the folks. I send gratitude to the whole sector. I love nonprofits. Why else would I call myself the nonprofit sector connector? My buddy Mick Collins from Pay It Forward just gave me a compliment on YouTube. Says, hey, Tommy D, nice fancy cap. And he spells fancy with a PH. Thanks. I like this lid too. The old flat cap look for sure. We are at time. I will see you all next week. Just go to SAKHI.org to check out the organization, to donate, to support. This has been another In Focus production. Make it a great day, gang. I'll see you later. See you next week. Bye.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
Uplift, educate, empower.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.